Welcome to episode 72 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of June the 4th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, the Tour de France winner admits using EPO to win the Tour, De Luca wins the Giro, Aubry mulls another hour attempt, FSA has a headache, and a medical journal says, bike riding is good for you. Yeah. Following the news, playing the flute on a bicycle pump, a bike to work week report, upcoming events, pod-safe cycling music, and more. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter. Go to www.thefredcast.com, click the link at the top left-hand side of the page to find out how you can get special deals at Cambria Bicycle Outfitter just for listening to the Fredcast. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, home of quality products, quality prices, and quality customer service. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. I know what you're saying. I've heard you for the last week. Where's my Fredcast? It's a great question. Here it is. I know it's late. I apologize for that. Listen, in about a month, I'll tell you about a number of changes that are going on for the Fredcast. In the meantime, bear with me. No pod fading going on here. I'm sorry I have to keep telling you that, but I keep getting your emails and your direct Twitter messages. Trust me, everything is doing fine. I have some very positive changes in store for the Fredcast, and you're going to be very happy about them. If you'll just stand by for another month, I'll tell you all about it. In the meantime, I did tease something on a recent show, and it's something that I want to clarify just a little bit. Tease a little bit more, and then next week I'll have the full scoop for you. Remember I told you, I asked you, what are you doing September 2nd through the 9th? Now, of course, if you look at your calendars, for those of you here in the United States, I mean, if you're not in the United States, go ahead and look at your calendar anyway. But for those of you who are in the United States, you'll know that that week includes the Labor Day holiday. And I thought, you know what? People are going to take off Labor Day, and they might take off a couple of extra days. And what are they going to want to do? They're going to want to go cycling. What would be a good place to go cycling? In the United States, maybe not. Let's just put it this way. I'm planning a Fredcast listener tour. It's going to be limited to about 20 Fredcast listeners with strong legs who are really looking for an amazing experience getting to ride some of the most famous countryside in Europe. And some of the famous places that you've heard about before and that we've talked about on the Fredcast. So I'm going to have full details for you next week, but you might want to cross out those days on the calendar. And then once we make the announcements and once we go live with the website and all of the information, you're going to want to get signed up, because I guarantee this trip is going to fill up. Personally, I'm looking forward to it. I wish I could tell you more about it, but next week I'll have all the details for you, and I'll also have an interview with the organizer of the tour from the professional cycling tour company that's putting it together for me and for you, the Fredcast listeners. Stay tuned. Next week I will have all the details. In the meantime, while we've been gone, there has been just a little bit of cycling news. Unfortunately, much of it has to do with doping, at least the first part of the news. So if you're one of those people who just hates the doping news, go ahead and hit that fast forward button now. But I think this is going to be something that you're going to want to hear about. So you know what? It's 4 minutes and 30 seconds in. Let's get right into the news, shall we? Well, you may remember when we recorded the last Fredcast that I was telling you about all of the Team Telecom riders who were coming forward and admitting to their use of doping in their cycling careers. And as you well know, Team Telecom is now known as T-Mobile. And I told you that there was a press conference upcoming the very next day that had been called by Bjarne Riis. Now, Bjarne Riis, one of the most famous cycling legends from that Team Telecom. He won the Tour de France in 1996 and is now the director sportif of Team CSC, a very well-respected cyclist, but someone around whom the doping rumors have been swirling over the last couple of years. And I told you, predicted, and I don't think it was a tough prediction, that perhaps this press conference that Rees was going to be holding was going to be his turn to announce his involvement in doping. And that is exactly what happened. The retired cyclist admitted that he used the blood booster EPO, something we've talked about here on the show time after time after time after time, from 1993 through 1998, including, of course, when he won the Tour de France in 1996. He said, quote, "I have taken doping. I have taken EPO. I have made errors, and I would like to apologize." A stunning admission on the part of Bjarne Rees, and something that really took the cycling world not so much by surprise, but it certainly was a storm that occurred. Now, of course, Bjarne Rees had a prepared statement in which he said, in part, "After the long run of confessions concerning the telecom team in the 1990s, I've decided to give a statement about my involvement. I've decided this for two reasons. First of all, I'm doing this to keep the focus on the work we're doing today that keeps cycling in the right perspective. The massive steps we've taken to fight doping and the ways in which we've secured that the team rests on the right and proper foundations. Second, I'm doing this to get rid of the endless discussions about things that are truly in the past and that I personally have put behind me a long time ago. I don't want my personal past to overshadow that work and brilliant effort that Team CSC is doing today. That also means that I did things that I shouldn't have, and I have regretted that ever since. Those were mistakes that I take the full responsibility for, and I don't have anyone to blame but myself. We all make mistakes, and I think my biggest mistake was to let my ambition get the better of me. That I have had to deal with a long time ago, and I'm glad to say that I'm a lot wiser now, both in my personal and in my professional life. I don't want the mistakes of my personal past to stand in the way of the work we are doing today. I did what it took to compete at the highest level back then, and it's a deep satisfaction for me that those days are long gone, and the sport has moved in the right direction. If that wasn't the case, I wouldn't be here today." A stunning admission indeed from one of cycling's most revered champions. And let's not forget, he won the Tour de France and he won it dirty. And so, of course, he was asked whether or not he considered himself a worthy winner of the Tour. And he said that he didn't feel that he was, and that if he wanted, if the tour organizers wanted, he'd be willing to give back his title. He said, quote, "My jersey is at home in a cardboard box. They're welcome to come and get it. I have my memories for myself." Now, as for famed tour director Christian Prudhomme from the Tour de France, quote, "Bjarne Rees said himself that he did not deserve to have won the tour in 1996 because he cheated. I think the same thing because he has soiled the yellow jersey. Seeing as he did not deserve to win," Prudhomme went on to say, does he deserve to lead a major cycling team? And I think that that's a good question, and one which the Team CSC owners are going to have to consider. Now, in the meantime, what exactly happens to the 1996 Tour de France? Because the winner, the person who crossed with the quickest time overall in the three-week event, was Bjarne Rees. Bjarne Rees has now admitted that he raced it dirty. Second place, another famous name, Jan Ullrich. Jan Ullrich, of course, who's been strongly implicated in the Operation Puerto affair. Okay, let's go to third place. Third place, Ricard Virenque. And fourth, Laurent Dufaux, both of whom were involved in the famed Festina affair. Now what do we do? Well, according to something that I read online, I believe it was at Cyclicious, Pat McQuaid said, quote, "I think the way to sort that out is to declare that there was no winner of the race in 1996. I wouldn't even think of going down the rider classification to search for a clean rider." Earlier today on the Spokesman podcast that I recorded with Joe Beer and Carlton Reed suggested that perhaps the first clean rider in the 96 Tour de France might have been Chris Boardman. I'm not sure about that. I haven't done the research, but certainly I think that I might actually agree with Pat McQuaid. I think that perhaps saying that there was no winner in 1996, as empty as that may seem, that might be the only way to solve this problem. Meanwhile, in Bjarne Riis's home country of Denmark, he had been in the Danish Sports Hall of Fame. Well, according to reports that we're reading now, he has now been removed from that Hall of Fame. And according to the president of the commission that elects sports stars to the list for the Hall of Fame, quote, Bjarne Riis has admitted to being doped. We therefore consider that his performance was faked. And for that reason, he cannot be among the greatest sportsmen of Denmark. That's a huge blow to somebody, to anyone. Imagine being in a Hall of Fame and then being stripped of your Hall of Fame status. Very, very bad. Then Team CSC, the team that Bjarne Riis manages as director sportif, has now lost one of their biggest sponsors. MAN AG, which is Europe's third largest truck maker, has ended its sponsorship of Team CSC. In a statement on their website, Mann said that they negotiated to sever their association with the sport last year following a wave of drug scandals, only to be persuaded to continue by CSC's anti-doping program. Remember the one that Bjarne Riis talked about in his written statement? Now on their website, they've said, quote, Mann has been disappointed again by the revelations about the use of prohibited substances. For this reason, it no longer considers it appropriate to employ professional cycling as a platform for corporate branding. And quite honestly, I think that this isn't the first, and it won't be the last time that a sponsor decides that right now professional cycling is just too much of a hot potato because of what's going on in the sport. And there are those who are saying that we may have upwards of 5 or 10 years of difficulties in professional cycling unless something is done right away to nip this problem in the bud and rid professional cycling of these doping problems. We may have 5 or 10 years of difficulties in getting sponsorship, in getting network television time, and in getting respect for the sport. But once the sport is clean, it will again return to prominence and it will again be a sponsor's dream. Until then, we may be in for a rough road. Now, there's no doubt that over the last week or so, every time I've talked to a fellow cyclist or a colleague in the industry, they've wanted to talk about one of two things. They've either wanted to talk about the Bjarne Riis admissions, or they've wanted to talk about the Giro d'Italia. And when we talk about this, we do talk about the possibility of sponsors leaving the sport. Well, I got a great email from listener Bill in Atlanta, and it was a copy of an email that he sent to someone high up at CSC. And it was about CSC's support of the team, and it was encouraging CSC to continue with their support of cycling. And I thought it was a great email and something that I thought I would like to read to you. So listener Bill went on to say to CSC, let me say that I appreciate your support of one of the really important teams in what I think is the most fascinating and beautiful sport. As a one-time racer and long-time rider and cycling fan, please let me urge you to stick with cycling. Everyone who follows cycling knows that there have always been rumors and suspicions regarding Riis, Ulrich, and the whole T-Mobile team, among others. Please don't pretend otherwise and act shocked. I don't excuse Riis, but I think he succumbed to the pressures of the time. Like many others, I believe he's now a serious opponent of doping and a positive influence on the problem today. By supporting former riders that come forward, we encouraged current riders to cooperate. CSC, T-Mobile, Slipstream, and others appear to be making real progress against doping. CSC can continue to be identified with the solution. In terms of public opinion, I think that short-term gains made with the broader public, who won't remember you're in cycling in a month, will not compare to the resentment of true cycling fans who are looking for leadership through a difficult time for cycling. There's no way I'd use any product or service from Liberty Mutual or Phonak. Sports sponsorship is not the easiest way to advertise, and it's only worth it if you also love the sport and the fans know it. This is when you can prove it to those who will remember it. Maybe Reese should give the jerseys to the first rider on the list who's never tested positive. Luttenberger? Clean as far as I remember. May I be the first to congratulate Peter Luttenberger on his as-yet unheralded triumph. We have to remember that throughout the history of cycling, doping has been tacitly tolerated to varying degrees. Scapegoating individuals in order to avoid confronting the problem always seems to be the easier than really combating the problem. Hang in there and thanks. In the long run, this might actually be a good thing for cycling. Well, Bill, my personal opinion, this is David now talking, is that you're right in most of what you say, but I do want to take you to task on one thing. Number one, I think you're absolutely right. I think that the teams, the doctors, the managers, the directors sportif, and the fans to some extent have pressured those riders who have used doping to do so. And so I think that's true. We really need to go after the establishment for their support and for the implication that they wanted the cyclists to dope. But on the other hand, in the end, it is up to personal responsibility. And it is up to the individual rider to decide, yes, I will, or no, I won't. And I know I keep talking about it because I think that these books are very insightful in showing you the pressures that the riders are under. But I recommend that you read those Dave Shields books that I've talked about, The Race and the Tour, especially The Tour, because it shows the pressure that these cyclists are under. And you feel the pressure that they're under. Yet I still believe that there are riders out there, hopefully tour winners, by the way, that there are riders out there who can ride clean and who can resist the pressure and who can win in spite of the fact that there is, I have no doubt, a large percentage of the peloton that's doping. I wish we didn't have to talk about this. I wish this was going to be the last time. But unfortunately, I do have more doping news this week. Number one, I'll go briefly through each of these. You'll remember that we talked about Eric Zabel, who admitted that he used EPO in 1996, and he confessed that he was using it while he too was a member of Team Telecom. Well, he's now a member of Team Milram. Milram has decided to honor Zabel's contract, and they said, quote, "The decision wasn't easy. We take the Pro Tour team's code very seriously, but Zabel's offense dates back 11 years. As a result, Zabel will remain a member of Team Milram and will continue to race as part of the team. Question, of course, is whether or not any of the organizers of the upcoming Pro Tour events, the Tour de France in particular, will still allow Eric Zabel to take part in their races. Time, of course, will tell. Knowing Christian Prudhomme, I have a feeling that he's going to fight very hard to keep an admitted doper out of his race. In the meantime, of course, it's also up to the German Cycling Federation as to whether or not they will allow him to race in the UCI Road World Championships in Stuttgart coming up in September. So there's Milram may be standing behind Eric Zabel, but the question is whether or not the sanctioning bodies will do so as well. Now, to close out the doping section of the news for this week is the news that the International Olympic Committee is now saying that they're going to open an investigation into possible doping offenses in cycling at past Olympic Games. One of the riders on the Team Telecom admission squad was Christian Henn. Christian Henn won a bronze medal in the road race in the 1988 Seoul Olympics. And then, of course, the probe could also put a further spotlight on Jan Ullrich, because he won a gold medal in the road race and a silver in the time trial at the 2000 Sydney Olympic Games. Well, let's get away from doping and let's talk about some people who hopefully are racing clean and gave us some great racing over the last 3 weeks. Of course, we're talking about the Giro d'Italia. And you may recall, if you're a listener to my other podcast, the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, that just before the Giro began, my friend Tim Jackson from Mazzi Bicycles predicted that this year's Giro would be won by none other by Danilo DeLuca, and that is exactly what happened. As a matter of fact, the last time we were together here on the Fredcast, we talked about the fact that DeLuca had retaken the Maglia Rossa in stage 12 when he won that stage and took back the pink jersey, and he never let it go. In fact, last Sunday, DeLuca, who's from Team Liquigas, completed the 2,166-mile 21-day race in 92 hours, 59 minutes, and 39 seconds. It was his first major victory of his career, and it was an amazing one. DeLuca said, quote, "Before the Giro, I thought I could win, but certainly not in this way. Today, I crowned a dream." Second place went to Andy Schleck from Luxembourg and Team CSC at 1 minute 55 seconds back. Third, Team Astana's Eddie Mazzoleni from Italy, 2 minutes 25 seconds back. Fourth, Gilberto Simoni from Saunier Duval, also from Italy, 3 minutes and 15 seconds back. And in fifth place, Damiano Cuniego from Italy and the Lampre Fondital team, 3 minutes 49 seconds behind DeLuca. Now, the story about DeLuca continues because there is a report coming out of Milan, Italy, that the newly crowned Tour of Italy champion has now set his sights on becoming the world champion after the biggest victory of his career. When he was asked if this was a beginning or an ending point in his career, he said, quote, "Well, we're at the end of the Giro, so I suppose it's an end. Nope. I have another 4 years in me. I have other aims, the world championship, for example, although the finishing line doesn't suit me this year, but it would have been difficult for me to have done better this year than win Liège-Bastogne-Liège and the Tour of Italy." So, looks like DeLuca is going to be going for the world championships. There's a lot of racing to go between now and then. I don't know what Paolo Bettini might have to say about that, but I suppose in a couple of months we will know for sure. So, of course, congratulations to DeLuca and Team Liquigas for their victory in this year's Giro d'Italia. And, of course, congratulations to Cannondale, because Cannondale was the bike that DeLuca was riding in this year's Giro d'Italia. And according to my friend Carlton Reed over at Bike Biz magazine, he received a press release today from Cannondale saying that they are going to produce a commemorative but limited edition DeLuca System 6 bike to complement DeLuca's win in this year's Giro d'Italia. They are only going to make 21 of these bikes, and they'll feature a white rear triangle as requested by, quote, the killer himself and used in his Giro victory. Every frame is going to be numbered from 1 to 21 to denote the corresponding stage of the Giro d'Italia. Every buyer will also get a signed Maglia Rossa and a commemorative killer wanted poster. The replica bike is said to cost 7,000 British pounds. So, if you're not going on the Fredcast listener tour, you may have some money left. Go to your Cannondale dealer and get your commemorative DeLuca Giro victory bike. Well, at the end of the Giro d'Italia, here are the Pro Tour standings as of right now. In first place, none other than Danilo DeLuca from Italy and Liquigas with 207 points. Second place is David Rebellin from Gerolsteiner with 157. Third, Alejandro Valverde from Spain and Castepargne with 107 points. Fourth, Damiano Cuniego from Italy and the Lampre Fondital team with 87 points. And in fifth, Oscar Freire from Spain and Rabobank with 82 points. As far as the team standings, Team CSC is currently sitting in first place, AG2R in second, Liquigas in third, Saunier Duval in fourth, and Team Astana in fifth. And I get a lot of questions about Team Discovery, so for those of you who are interested, they're sitting in sixth place in the Pro Tour standings as of right now. Well, of course, when it comes to Grand Tours, now that the Tour of Italy is out of the way, that's Grand Tour number one for the year. What, of course, is the second Grand Tour that occurs every year and begins in July? None other than the Tour de France. And the Tour de France has now listed which teams will be joining the Tour in 2007. And they've also included a couple of wildcard teams, including Team Astana. And you'll remember, of course, that Astana was the team that was obliterated with the Operation Puerto revelations coming out just before the tour began last year, and they were unable, therefore, to participate. This year, they are a wildcard team. Included with Team Astana in this year's Tour de France are AG2R, Agritubel, Astana, Barlow World, Boyges Telecom, Cost Epargnier, Cofidis, Credit Agricole, CSC, Team Discovery, Euskaltel, Française de Joux, Gerold Steiner, Lampre, Likigas, Milram, Predictor Lotto, Quickstep, Rabobank, Sonier Duval, and T-Mobile. So that is your lineup for teams in this year's Tour de France. And each of those teams will now work on coming up with their specific roster of riders for this year's tour. You may recall that a few weeks ago I reviewed the new film The Flying Scotsman, which tells the story of Scottish cycling phenom Graham Obrey and his attempts at the hour record and other amazing cycling exploits. Today on the Cycling Roundtable podcast, The Spokesman, and I'm sorry for cross-promoting that here so much today, but it was a great show this morning, and I'd also like to see more of you listening to it because I think that you'd get a lot out of it. Well, today on the show, we had Joe Beer, and Joe is a friend of Graham's, and he had a little bit of news for us telling us that Graham is considering going after the hour record once more. Here's just a little excerpt from the show where I ask Joe about Graham's plans and whether or not he thinks Graham can do it. Do you think that he will be going for the hour record again soon? If so, how soon? And what do you think his chances are?
He's actually said on the podcast that I've recorded and hope to put out very soon, maybe middle of June, that he'll never say never, but as the pressure got more and more and he was being dragged in various directions, he finds it very difficult to really focus to the level that he'd need to. His chances, well, if anybody can do an hour record attempt twice within 12 hours and actually take a record off of a superb athlete like Francesco Moser, I don't think you can ever say that Graham is somebody that can't do something. I think that's what he thrives on, is if somebody says he can't do it, he'll try. And he's still been doing some quite quick times. He clocked recently a 19:40 for 10 miles on not a fast course in Scotland. He's getting good data from his turbo trainer that he was training on, but I think he probably just found that it was he was going in too many directions. I think if there's anybody that could do it, he's an expert at absolutely annihilating himself on a bike. To see him time trial, you always know that people will probably be stood by the side of the road wincing because they cannot believe how hard he can push himself. I mean, he can literally push himself, as he says, close to death. I mean, he really has a talent that few other people have got. His actual chances, well, somebody is yet to specifically go for that record. And when we were looking into how fast you'd have to go, what equipment he'd need to use, we spotted a little known fact that Sozenko, who currently holds the record at 49.7, he actually used a standard 32-spoke front wheel. At the speed that they're going, that's worth 500 metres. They even had cellophane over his shoes instead of proper overshoes. So somebody is yet to sit down and properly put everything into an attempt. I think he may have a go. He was certainly looking to try and beat Francesco Moser's attempt that he did at 42, which was just shy of the world record at the time. But I'd never say never with Graham.
So once again, a little bit of news made there on The Spokesman. It looks like Graham Obrey is going to consider the hour record again. We wish him luck. And Graham, if you're listening, we'd love to have you here on the Fredcast or on the Spokesman. So drop us an email. It's thefredcast@gmail.com. Well, here was a bit of news that was troubling to me personally just because of my personal history with the company and my affection for the company and just sort of wondering what's going on. And this was the news that came out late last week, which indicates that Cane Creek has told Full Speed Ahead that they are no longer a licensee of threadless headsets or the a headset patent. Now, FSA has been licensing this patent for 10 years or so, and now Tianxin, the parent company of Full Speed Ahead, has sent out a letter to their customers around the world that says, quote, FSA and Tianxin Industries and Cane Creek have terminated our agreement to manufacture headsets under the A headset patent. This is effective immediately and will affect customers where the patent is valid in the United States, Canada, Switzerland, Germany, France, the UK, and Italy. Please note that this only affects headsets manufactured under a specific patent, and this is patent number 5095770, and doesn't affect any threaded headsets. This is a big deal. When I was involved with FSA, and it's funny, I was cleaning out some files recently and I came across the original documents of Full Speed Ahead's incorporation that I filed many, many years ago. And at that time, headsets and bottom brackets were primarily what we were selling. That was our brand. And you've heard my daughter Emily on the show. Well, her older daughter Megan, who's now 14, when she was a tiny tot, just 2 or 3 years old, she was going around with mom and dad to mountain bike races around North America. And she would sit there at that booth and she would ask people, do you want to buy a headset? And that was our stock and trade. It was headsets and bottom brackets. So to see a feud, what appears to be a feud, going on between FSA and Cane Creek, it is troubling to me, and I'm hoping that they will be able to settle it. I don't think it's good for either Cane Creek or Full Speed Ahead, and of course, if either of those companies offer to come onto the Fredcast or onto the Spokesman and give us their sides of the story, of course, I will bring those to you. In the meantime, as my friend Craig Harrison, who is a well-known marketing guru in the bicycle industry, mentioned to me today, can you imagine all of the bikes that are currently being spec'd for 2008 with FSA threadless headsets? What's going to happen now? I think that it's not only going to be throwing FSA into a head spin, but it's also got a bunch of product managers working the midnight oil this evening, trying to figure out what they're going to do for their headsets in 2008. It will be interesting at Interbike to see what is on a lot of those bikes, which normally would have FSA headsets. Stay tuned. Switching gears for a moment, here's something that we've talked about on the show before, and I think that finally, this is a company that's perfected the concept, and this is the concept of municipal bicycle rentals. And I've told you that I've seen these in Europe before, literally where you go up to a bicycle and perhaps with your cell phone by dialing a certain SMS code or maybe with a credit card, you're able to rent a bike. And a lot of these bikes are not in the best shape and they've had some issues with theft and things like that before. Well, here is a company that's come out with a more innovative approach to this concept. There's a Canadian access control company called QI Systems. And last week they introduced an RFID-based bicycle rental automation system. Now, RFID stands for radio frequency identification. And if you're not familiar with that, well, RFID tags can be very small, smaller than the button on your shirt. It's the same technology that's in the mobile speed pass that mobile gas station customers use. It's the same technology that's in the uniform that you might wear. If your company rents you a uniform, there's a small RFID tag in there so that when it gets back to the laundry and they wash it, they're able to sort it automatically just using a little radio frequency tag. It's the same technology that's in the transponder on your automobile as you're going through a toll station, and it automatically checks that radio frequency to figure out that it's you going through the toll booth, and then it charges your credit card. Well, these bikes and these bike racks are fitted with RFID technology. Here's the way the system works. Each bike is tagged and secured to the RFID reader equipped rack. To check out one of the bikes, you scan your credit card, then the bike is released for you to use for a certain period of time. If you don't return the bike within that time, then the credit card that you swiped gets charged an extra fee. The system determines the presence of each bike based on whether or not the RFID tag is within the proper range of the rack, and then all the racks are wired to a central server so that it can monitor the inventory across multiple locations. So for instance, you could rent the bike at location A and return it at location B, and as long as you get it back there within the prescribed period of time, your credit card won't be charged. It's a great idea for municipal bicycle rental, and the first systems are going to be deployed in Tulsa, Oklahoma, here in the United States. There will be 4 cycle stations in Tulsa with a fleet of 75 so-called Tulsa Townie Pink bicycles, and these are going to be deployed at the city's River Parks Recreation Area. The single-gear cruiser bikes are going to be available free for 24 hours. If they're not returned within that time, your credit card gets charged $100. This is a great idea and something that I hope will expand across North America as well as across the entire world. I'm looking forward to hearing how this works in Tulsa. And if you want more information, I've put some links into the show notes. And finally tonight, here's a story that gives you scientific proof that it's okay to come home from your ride and eat just a little bit more than you normally would. Research published in the Journal of Endocrinology, and I've put a link in the show notes if you'd like to read the exact story, noted that moderate exercise after meals reduced appetite and led to lower intake at the next meal. Researchers at the University of Surrey and Imperial College London studied how exercise after a meal affected hunger levels, the amount of food eaten at the next meal, and the level of hormones produced by the stomach, hence the endocrinology. Now, a group of 12 people were given the same breakfast, and then they were split into 2 groups. One of those groups exercised at 65% of their max heart rate, and the other group, they basically just sat around. Now, the people who exercised obviously burned more calories compared to those who just sat quietly. Now, the exercisers burned about 492 kilocalories compared to those who sat quietly at 197 kilocalories. Now, when they were both given the chance to eat afterwards, either after sitting around or cycling, the people who exercised ate more, on average 913 kilocalories, than people who had not exercised at 762 kilocalories. But when the amount of energy burned during the cycling was taken into account, those who exercised had actually taken in overall fewer calories than those who hadn't. And this is the interesting part, the people who exercised reported lower levels of hunger during the exercise period. According to study leader Dr. Denise Robertson, quote, "In the past, we've been concerned that although exercise burns energy, people subsequently ate more after working out, and that this would cancel out any possible weight reduction effects of exercise. Our research found that moderate exercise after a meal may decrease hunger during the exercise itself by increasing the amount of hormones that tell the brain our stomachs are full. This is an initial study where we only examined a small number of people. We now need to carry out a larger study to confirm this effect and the mechanisms of how it occurs. Our research shows that exercise may alter people's appetite to help them lose weight and prevent further weight gain as part of a healthy, balanced lifestyle. So there you go. Have a nice breakfast. Go for a nice ride. Have some donuts. You're going to be safe." And that sounds like a sweet place to end the news for tonight. Hey, just a quick update for you on how we're doing with our power meter reviews. As I mentioned before, and forgive me, I once again screwed up the name of the company, but I am currently testing the Polar CS600 cycle computer, heart rate monitor, and power meter. enjoying it so far, and I will have a review on that in just about 2 weeks now. So stay tuned for that. Following that, I have received my Power Tap, and that one will be coming up just a couple of weeks after the Polar review, and hopefully after that I'll have one or two others to wrap up the overall review of power meters for you here on the Fredcast. Now, just a couple of more updates, if you don't mind, on the iBike, because John Heyman from iBike, who, by the way, corrects me, he is not the president of VeloComp. VeloComp's a partnership, and he and his partner Glenn are equals, so he is the co-founder, along with Glenn, of VeloComp. John's been emailing me just some additional information, and the first thing he wants you to know is that the Intel Mac drivers are finally available. They were posted up on the iBike website the day that they were received from iBike's vendor. So go ahead and grab those. And oh, by the way, for those of you who are on Windows, the Vista drivers are also available. So go ahead and grab those. There is a link in the show notes to those. And then also, there was a question that I received on the website and here on the show about doing coast downs and whether or not, if you do it in one position or another, if you get into a different position, whether or not your iBike readings will be correct. And John said, yes, it is correct that if you do a coast down in one position, say, for instance, with your hands on the hoods, and then you ride in another position, say, for instance, in the drops, there will be a wattage difference during the drops portion of the ride. They're very upfront about that in their marketing materials and in their instructions. However, it's also the case that most cyclists ride in the same position most of the time. Therefore, in the instructions, they recommend that riders do the coast down in the position where they ride most often. In fact, their testing shows that over the course of a ride, the cumulative error caused by different riding positions is only a few percent. So while it's true that they make very practical compromises in their way of measuring power, in John's opinion, it's extremely important to remind everyone that in exchange for those relatively minor compromises, they're getting what he says are 1, the lightest, 2, the easiest to install, 3, the most portable, and 4, the most affordable power meter on the market. And by the way, he also wants you to know that if you do have multiple riding positions, say for instance you have a time trial position or you have a road riding position that's on the hoods or in the drops, then do a coast down for each and then save them as profiles on your computer and then select the one that you want to use for that day's ride. So if you're on your time trial bike, for instance, or maybe you're on your mountain bike, or maybe you're on your road bike, then you could use each of those profiles. So those are great tips for those of you who are considering, or for those of you who have the iBike. John, thanks so much for those. And for the rest of you, stay tuned for future power meter reviews, starting with Polar, and then going to the Power Tap, and then beyond. Speaking of power meters, I got a couple of fantastic emails from the producers of a great podcast for those of you who are triathlon and Ironman fans or participants. This is the podcast known as Ironman Talk, and they had a great episode recently that talked about training with power. And whether you're a triathlete or not, this is an episode that I think you will find very interesting. I have put a link in the show notes. I recommend that you go to www.thefredcast.com and click on the show notes for tonight's episode number 72. Click on the link that says Listen Here next to Iron Man Talk episode on training with power. I think that you will enjoy it as much as I did when I listened to it just a couple of days ago. So thanks guys for sending that along. And for those of you that are interested in triathlons, this is probably yet another podcast that you will want to add to your iTunes subscriptions. Okay, what, you may be wondering, on earth is David playing for you now? Well, This is the audio from a YouTube video, and of course there's links in the show notes as always, that was sent to me by listener Wes. And Wes, I want to thank you for sending this, because what you're listening to is English flutist Trevor Y, who is playing the swan. Now, if this is the strangest sounding flute you've ever heard, I agree with you. And the reason is because the flute is not a flute, it's actually a portable bicycle pump. Give a listen. Not bad, huh? I mean, not bad for a bicycle pump. Anyway, go ahead and check out the YouTube video. Thanks, Wes, for sending that in. I've put a link in the show notes to where you can find that. You really have to see it to believe it. Hey, while we're talking about audio and while the bicycle pump flute fades away into the sunset, I've got a little bit of audio that I'm going to play for you. As a matter of fact, it's three voicemails, all of them from one of the longest listeners on the Fredcast. This is listener Matt from Stockton. I met Matt during the tour of California this year along with his kids, and Matt sent along a couple of voicemail messages that he recorded during Bike to Work Week. And I thought that they were interesting, and I thought that I would play them for you here on the show. So without further ado, here's Fredcast listener Matt.
Hey, good morning, Dave. And this is Matt up here in Stockton, California. We met at the when you were covering the tour of California. Anyway, just thought I'd give you a call. You were the one of the first people I thought to call this morning. It's 5 o'clock, and I'm getting on my bike and getting ready to ride to work. I know it's officially Ride Your Bike to Work Day on Thursday, but hey, it's Ride Your Bike to Work Week, right? And since I work 65 miles away in Pleasanton, I'm only going to do it once this week. So I thought I'd call you in the morning when I get started, and maybe I'll call you and leave you a message when I get to work, and then I'll call you at the end of the day when I ride my bike back home. So anyway, hope I'm actually sure I'll be fine today, because I'm wearing my Fredcast socks. So anyway, I'll leave you a message at the end of the day, let you know how I did. See ya.
Okay, so that was his message first thing in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. Matt got up, he put on his Fredcast socks, like every good Fredcast listener. Still available, by the way. Go to www.thefredcast.com. And then he went out for his ride during Bike to Work Week, and he figured he'd call me when he got to the office. And he did. And here's Matt's message. I think it speaks for itself.
Hello, David. It's Matt. I called you, 6.5 hours ago when I started my trek into the office. And I got here a little while ago. But that had to be the hardest, toughest 65 miles I have ever ridden. The first 28, 29 miles was pretty good. But man, right when I headed west, that wind just was insane. It wasn't breeze, it was gale force winds. I mean, it was pushing. The whole time I saw stuff flying past me. There's a couple of roads with just a minor, very small incline. You know, normally hit that road at, 12, 13, 14 miles an hour. It was all I could do in my lowest gear to stay at 5 miles an hour. And it was that way all the way the last 35 miles. Although the last couple miles was a little bit easier. But it was, what normally takes about 4.5 hours. Took a little closer to 6 hours. So in I'm just pooped. So luckily my wife works not too far away, and she has to pass here going home. So I am going to be satisfied with simply riding to work. And I'll hitch a ride with her because I am absolutely exhausted. So anyway, that's my story. And couldn't have done it without my Fredcast socks. Haha. Anyway, thanks for listening, and take care.
I feel for you, Matt. I have been there. I chronicled it in a recent show when Emily and I talked about the gale force winds that we battled out there in the middle of the California desert. And I'm not playing this in any way, shape, or form to ridicule Matt or his achievement of riding to work during bike to work week. You know, sometimes it just can be tough out there. We're not always going to have sunny days with the wind at our back. Sometimes that wind is going to be square in our faces, and it is going to do everything within its very strong power to make sure that we have a tough day. But listen to Matt. Even at the end of all that, he still is talking with a smile in his voice. And you know what? I know Matt. He got right back on his bike the very next day. So congratulations for the achievement and for riding to work and for sharing that with me and with the Fredcast listeners. Any of you who rode to work during Bike to Work Week or who commute every single day of the year deserve a pat on the back and a congratulations. And Matt is leading the charge for all of you. And then Matt called back one more time with this very nice message, which is again indicative of the reaction that I've gotten to a recent show. Here once again is listener Matt from Stockton.
Hey, good morning, David and Emily. This is Matt from Northern California, and I just got done listening to your extra episode on the ride across California, and that was the most inspiring story I have ever heard. And you guys both have a knack for telling a story and really drawing me in. So, you know, Emily, congratulations. That is absolutely awesome. To put in that that kind of ride with those kind of miles and that kind of climbing in headwind, that is just so awe-inspiring for me. And, you know, I did I rode my bike to work one day last week, and I actually put a little segment on the podcast that I do with my family. And, you know, after listening to your guys' story, I feel like such a wimp after doing a 65-mile ride-to-work day and being whooped. Listening to what you guys went through, and Emily, to hear in your voice that you have a little bit of energy still at the end of the day, that was absolutely amazing. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. That was so awesome. And David, thanks for sharing that with us. That was great. That's one I'm gonna keep and listen to whenever I feel discouraged or when I feel like I can't make a climb or something. I'm gonna have to pull that one out. So great job, guys. Thanks for sharing.
And that has been the universal reaction. As I've told you several times, I was a little hesitant at first about sharing Emily's experiences and sharing a personal experience like that here on the show, but the universal reaction has been overwhelming and very positive. And every one of your voicemails and emails I have passed along to Emily, and she just gets this great little smile. So thank you very much for enjoying that. Thank you very much for all of your kind words from Matt and from everyone else who sent in their regards to Emily and their satisfaction with the shows that we did on the ride across California. It was a blast, and I was glad to share it with all of you. Now, speaking of events, I do have a couple of events that I want to share with you that are upcoming in the next couple of weeks in the cycling and active sports areas. And the first is the Tour de Cure Golden Spike Century. This is taking place June the 9th, 2007, and this is taking place in Brigham City, Utah. That's near Salt Lake City, and this is, of course, to benefit diabetes research. And this one's kind of close to my heart in one way, because I was asked to produce a version of my How to Prepare for Your First Century podcasts specifically for the Tour de Cure Golden Spike Century. And apparently it went over very well. It was my pleasure to do it. I enjoyed doing it. And for those of you who are going to be doing that ride this coming weekend, or for those of you who are looking for a ride this coming weekend, this is a great one to do. And of course, there is a link in the show notes. June 9th, Brigham City, Utah, the Tour de Cure Golden Spike Century. Now, in the same area, in the Salt Lake City, Utah region, is another event which is, of course, close to my heart, and this is the Harman's MS-150 Bike Tour, of course, to benefit the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and this would be the Utah State Chapter. This is June the 22nd through the 24th at the Cache Valley Fairgrounds in Logan, Utah. You can select from a 40, a 75, or a 100-mile route, and this is what they term Utah's premier fundraising cycling event. It's another MS-150, which, and you know, there are over 100 MS bike tours around North America. This is probably one of the most popular organized bike tours anywhere in the United States. If you haven't done one, as somebody who is affected by MS in his family every single day, I'd highly encourage you to do it. Go ahead and check it out. Of course, there's a link in the show notes. And also, you're going to sense a trend going on here. I found out about something. This isn't cycling related, but for those of you who may be triathletes or just runners, I found out about an amazing series of events and something that I wanted to bring your attention to, because if you do run, and if you can put together a team of, oh, I don't know, about 11 of your closest friends, this sounds like a great event. Now, I'm not personally a runner. I haven't done much running since I played football in high school, and running was a punishment that the coaches doled out to us. But this is called the Ragnar Relay. And if you're not familiar with it, of course, I've put a link in the show notes, but let me read to you what it says on the website before I give you the dates and the location. It says, think of it as a 178-mile party with 12 best friends. Teams of 12 will rock out to live bands, enjoy the wacky participant costumes, and make lifelong friends with teammates and competitors. Teams will party along the backside of the beautiful Wasatch Mountains, once again in Utah, from Logan, which is 85 miles north of Salt Lake City, to Park City, Utah, which is 15 miles east of Salt Lake City. Now, I mean, most people, of course, know where Park City is, right? So how does this work? There's you and 11 friends, and you're running, but it's 178 miles. Here's the way it works. Each of you runs three legs during a 24-hour relay race. And these legs can range, have various distances. They may be anywhere from 3 to 8 miles. And this is taking place June the 22nd through the 23rd. Again, you start in Logan and you run to Park City, Utah. I have some friends who have done it. I know some people who are involved in it. They say that it is a great event and something that I've looked at the YouTube videos on it and looks like a blast. So if you're a runner, or you know, even if you're just somebody who's in moderately good shape, I'm sure that you could handle some of these 3 to 8 mile legs that are out there, because of course they have varying difficulties. This sounds like a lot of fun. And just like these other events I've mentioned that are in Utah, it's beautiful out there this time of year and something that you could consider. Now, Ragnar has these in Utah. There is another one, August 24th through the 25th in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and that goes to St. Paul, Minnesota. There's another one in late July this year that goes from Blaine to Langley, Washington, and they recently had one in March that went from Wickenburg to Scottsdale, Arizona. They sound like a lot of fun. Go ahead and check out the links in the show notes. That's called the Ragnar, R-A-G-N-A-R Relay. And then finally tonight, a non-Utah event, I've bucked the trend here for the evening, July 7th through the 8th will be the 16th annual bike swap in Sonoma, California at the Infineon Raceway. And this one is to benefit a great charity, something we've talked about here on the show before, and it's called Trips for Kids. And of course, there's several ways that you can get involved. You can reserve a space to sell used or overstocked bikes or bike-related products. You can donate items for them to sell, and of course that would be tax-deductible, or you could sponsor the swap by making a financial contribution. Or finally, you could attend the bike swap July 7th through the 8th. And the great thing about attending it is that it is also part of the Infineon Cougar Mountain Classic, which is an annual festival of pro and amateur road and mountain bike races with a large sports expo and special events for the whole family. So go ahead, if you are in Sonoma, California, July 7th through the 8th, check this event out. I know it will not disappoint. Well, once again, it has been another long show, and I appreciate your staying with it, and I hope that you've gotten a lot out of it. You know, and if you have gotten a lot out of it, I hope that you'll consider supporting the show. There's a lot of different ways that you can do that. First, you can go to Podcast Alley, and you can vote for the Fredcast as one of your favorite podcast. Please do that. There's a link in the show notes, as well as one on the left-hand side of the website as you scroll down. Of course, our website is www.thefredcast.com. You can tell your friends about the Fredcast. Do me a favor this week. Tell three friends. Tell your club. Tell anyone who's a cyclist about the Fredcast and help spread the word. Or go to iTunes and write a favorable review if you're so inclined. You can always, if you like, make a donation to the Fredcast. All your donations go to support the show, to support the bandwidth and everything that we do here on the show. There is a PayPal donation button on the page. You can go to our website and you can click the CBO link and you can shop for your cycling products at Cambria Bicycle Outfitter. That supports the show as well. We would appreciate it. I know Cambria would, and I think you would appreciate it because you'd be getting some great products at a great price, and I know that you'll be getting great customer service. Or you can do what listener Matt did, and you can place your order for a pair of limited edition, at this point, Fredcast cycling socks by the Sock Guy. And there is a Fredcast socks button on the website, so go ahead and check that out. Now, if you want to contact the Fredcast, there's a lot of ways to stay in touch with the show, starting with sending us an email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. I read every one of your emails, and I do my best to respond to as many of them as possible. Just be patient. I will try to get to yours. I can't guarantee that I respond to all of them, but I do read every one, and they mean a lot to me. Of course, if you'd like to leave an audio comment, as listener Matt did, you can do so on our listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. Don't forget to visit the website for updates, which do happen every once in a while, and that's at www.thefredcast.com. Or if you'd like to follow what's going on with the show, you can log on to Twitter at www.twitter.com and follow the Fredcast. And there's a link in the show notes telling you how you can do that. That's going to do it for the show for this evening. But before we go, as we do every week, it's time for our PodSafe cycling music. Our music comes to us tonight, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. In keeping with our sort of Utah theme this evening, I've got a song called Radio Sundance by the Tragedy Kings, and I've put links in the show notes to where you can find the Tragedy Kings on iTunes, on the PodShow site, as well as their own website. That's going to do it for the Fredcast. We'll be back in one more week with what I already know is going to be a very, very full Fredcast. Thank you so much for staying subscribed. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride. We'll be right back.
Sundance.